It's my great pleasure to take this opportunity to introduce our work on the unconventional magnetism, the dynamic generation of spin orbital coupling and electron liquid crystal state. First, let me thank Leo for the organization and give me the opportunity for this talk. These are our two recent publications. I printed some of them there. If you are interested, just come to pick one. Let me introduce my collaborators on this topic. They are Professor Eduardo Fredkin and Mr. Kai Sun at the UIUC and Professor Xu Chenzhang at Stanford. I also thank Professors Liang, McBeasley, Sankar, Balsama, Sandy Fetter, Jason Ho, Andrews Ludwig, Yongbai King, Steve Kilson, Tony Leggett, and Jiang Zanen for very helpful discussions. This is the outline of the talk. First, I will give a long introduction. Basically, I will explain our definition of unconventional magnetism. I will show it has deep connections to several important research directions in conventional metaphysics. After that, I will present the mechanism for this unconventional magnetic state and further discuss the low energy excitations over the ground state. Finally, I will discuss the possible experimental realization and the detection method. This is the structure of the introduction part. Basically, I will show this unconventional magnetic state has deep connections with these three research directions, including the unconventional superconductivity, spin orbital coupling, and the anisotropic electron liquid crystal state. I will begin with the motivation of the work by making an analogy between magnetism and superconductivity, focusing on their symmetry properties and spatial rotations. Let me first reveal some basic knowledge of ferromagnetic states. You know, ferromagnetism has been known for thousands of years. In time of the ancient Greece and ancient China, people observed that the lodestone attracts iron. Ferromagnetism has important applications throughout human history. One of the earliest and one of the most important applications is a compass. This picture shows the structure of the earliest compass. It's a spoon made of lodestone. It can rotate on this tree. When it stops, the handle of the spoon points to source. So the Chinese name for this compass is called source pointer. But our modern understanding of ferromagnetism appears after the establishment of quantum mechanics. So basically, ferromagnetism is a many-body collective effect. The driving force is exchange interaction among electrons. For example, if two electrons with same spin configuration, dipole's exclusion principle, their orbital wave function has to be anti-symmetrized. So these two particles, they cannot come too close to each other. On the other hand, if two electrons with opposite spin configuration, they are distinguishable and can come close to each other. So by polarizing their spin configuration, we can save some Coulomb-repulsive interaction energy. This effect is called exchange interaction. This picture also applies for many-body system. If the exchange interaction is strong enough, then the system will develop spontaneous spin polarization. For example, some electron of the spin down can flip the sign of the spin and move to the top of the spin up electron scene. Stoner gave a criterion to describe how strong the interaction is needed to drive this phase transition. Well, the U is the average interaction strength, and N0 is the density of state over the Fermi surface. When U times N0, which is the dimensionless constant, if it is larger than a certain value, then the ferromagnetic phase transition occurs. Now, let me continue to reveal some symmetry properties of the ferromagnetic state. Certainly, the spin rotational symmetry is already broken because of the spin polarization. However, if we look at in the orbital channel, actually the orbital rotational symmetry is not broken. The spin polarization over the Fermi surface is a constant spin polarized along a fixed direction. This situation is quite similar to what occurs in a conventional superconductivity, which is characterized by the formation of core pairs. In a conventional case, or in the S-wave core pairing, the pairing wave function is a constant which doesn't change either on the Fermi surface. So in this sense, the ordinary ferromagnetic state can be considered as a S-type of magnetism. So we know for the poor pairing structure, in addition to the conventional poor pairing, nature provides us many unconventional poor pairing structures. Basically, there are high partial wave channel generalization of poor pairs. The most celebrated example is the high TC cuprate, where the pairing wave function changes the sign of the Fermi surface, exhibits a D-wave structure. We also have many other type unconventional poor pairing. For example, the P-wave poor pairing, which occurs in the strontium resonance and the helium-3 systems. So, by making an analogy between superconductivity and the magnetism, it's quite natural to further study the high partial wave channel generalization of the ferromagnetic state. Now, in this unconventional magnetic state, we will see the spin polarization is no longer a constant over the Fermi surface, but varies over the momentum. These two pictures show the Fermi surface structures for the two possible P-wave magnetic states. They include both isotropic case and anisotropic case. Let's look at the isotropic phase. Well, the dashed line is the original Fermi surface before the instability. After phase transition, the Fermi surface splits into a larger one and a small one. On a large Fermi surface, for example, electron spin can become to be parallel to its momentum, while on the small Fermi surface, electron spin is anti-parallel to its momentum. Such a state is isotropic. The P-wave feature is clear if we change the direction of momentum k to minus k, spin flips the sign. This isotropic state has an anisotropic cousin. Now, in such a state, the spin up electron from the surface is shifted to the right, and spin down from the surface is shifted to the left. If we change the direction of momentum k to minus k, spin also flips the sign.
Yes. So far that only exchange forces are involved, or spin orbit also is involved in what is assumption here?
I will discuss more carefully later. But the spin at the Hamiltonian level, we don't have spin up the coupling. The spin up the coupling is a result, not the reason.
What is the symmetry group in the background?
It's the
spin,
yes.
Rotation, yeah?
Spin rotation and orbital rotation, two symmetries.
Separately. The direct product of two S.
Exactly. Yeah, I will discuss in a few slides of the symmetry breaking pattern of.
There is a complete classification,
yes.
of magnetism in this exchange,
yes.
case, which was done by Andreev and Marchenko.
Yes.
Many years ago, do you know about that?
It is that's in the real space, in my understanding.
Hmm?
That's in the real space, in some triangle lattice.
It doesn't matter.
Well, this is an itinerant system. It's a result of Pomerantchik instability.
Okay.
Before I discuss the magnetism and the properties of this unconventional magnetic state, let me provide more background material from experimental side. We'll see in this, let me begin with the isotropic phase. We'll see in such a phase, the spin orbital coupling has already been dynamically generated from many body interaction. So this is provide a new mechanism for the spin orbital coupling. We know in condensed matter physics, the spin orbital coupling plays an important role, in particular in the emerging science of spintronics. Basically, because of spin orbital coupling, people can manipulate electron spin degree of freedom by using electric fields. Basically, electric field couples to electron orbital motion, which affects spin degree of freedom, so spin orbital coupling. For example, recently there's a considerable research interest in the called spin Hall effect, which is a generalization of the ordinary charge Hall effect. In a Hall effect, there's an external magnetic field. You pass a current, and because of Lorentz force, the current is deflected. As a result, on the sample's edge, you develop a charge imbalance, which results in a Hall voltage. In a spin Hall case, there's no external magnetic field, but because of spin up the coupling, the deflection pattern for spin up electron and spin down electron are opposite. As a result, there's no charge imbalance, but develop opposite spin accumulation pattern on the sample's edge. This result has been theoretically predicted by Professor Chen Yu's group at Austin, and also with my predicted by my former PhD advisor Shouchen Zhang's group at Stanford, and also some pioneering work by Jorge Hirsch at San Diego. And also this deflection pattern has already been observed experimentally. Now, let's continue to reveal some microscopic origin of spin-orbital coupling. We know spin-orbital coupling actually originates from relativistic physics as a low-energy approximation to a Dirac equation. This can be intuitively understood as follows. Suppose an electron move in an external electric field. If they change the reference frame, if we set the Komorian frame with the electron, then the electron is at rest, and the electric field begins to move. And due to the Lorentz transformation, we know this will induce an internal magnetic field which couples electron spin. This gives rise to the spin-orbital coupling. As we can see in this conventional mechanism for the spin-orbital coupling, this is largely a single body effect, not directly related to many body interactions. Since we know many body physics is more interesting and richer than the single body physics, it would be interesting to provide a deep connection between spin-orbital coupling and many body interactions. In the following, we will provide such a mechanism, and we show a dynamically generated spin-orbital coupling through unconventional magnetic phase transitions, and this is a many-body collective effect. Since this spin-orbital coupling is generated through phase transitions, it has certain advantages. First, the spin-orbital coupling strength can be easily tuned.
Yeah. Is it the same spin-orbit which appears, for example, in exchange anti-ferromagnetic?
Anti-ferromagnetic.
Why then? So we have a coupling of direction of spin to position in this case, yeah?
You mean the just the ordinary ferromagnet S dot S?
Standard anti-ferromagnet with only exchange of direction.
That doesn't have spin-orbital coupling, it's SU2 invariant, right?
Again, you have a dependence of magnetization on position. This is a kind of what you call
spin-orbital
coupling.
No, this
without
you exchange interaction cannot give spin-orbital coupling. It's SU2 invariant, right? S delta S. There's no spin-orbital coupling. If you have spin-orbital coupling, then SU2 will be broken. For example, Jaroszynski-Moria. I talk in the Jaroszynski-Moria type spin-orbital coupling.
But here also there is no spin-orbital coupling in the background yet. That is only the due to violation of symmetry, it appears, yeah?
Well, but the nail state doesn't have spin-orbital coupling.
So what do you call...
I will show this, the symmetry breaking pattern. It's similar to what you said about the Andrew for the result, but it's in the itinerant system. Okay. So let's look at again this isotropic p-wave magnetic states where the Fermi surface splits into a large Fermi surface and a small Fermi surface. On large Fermi surface, electron spins parallel to its momentum, while on the small Fermi surface, electron spin is anti-parallel to its momentum. Clearly, in such a system, the spin is no longer conserved, but the helicity operator, the spin's projection and its momentum remains a good quantum number. Over the Fermi surface, we can see there's no net spin moment. So the other parameter here is the spin dipole moment in the momentum space. This is the difference. Let me emphasize here, this spin dipole moment is defined in momentum space, not in the coordinate space.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. It's closer probably to helium 3.
Exactly. What we did is just a particle channel analogy. I will show that it's a comparison between helium 3. Let's take the two-dimensional case, for example, and we define the two spatial components of the spin-dipole moment. Each of them is a free vector in the spin space. Let's pay attention to this angular form factor, sine theta and cosine theta. This reflects to the p-wave or the dipole moment nature. For this surface structure, this order parameter pattern is depicted here. Then the mean field Hamiltonian for such a state is with a sigma dot k type spin of the coupling. The coupling strength is proportional to the order parameter. Since this spin of the coupling is derived from a this transition, we may ask what kind of symmetry breaking pattern should it be. To answer this sort of question, let me sketch a possible phase diagram. The horizontal axis here is a coupling constant, it's F1A. I shall explain what F1A means later. On the right-hand side, I assume is a disordered phase, is ordinary from a liquid state. In such a state, the spin up and spin down from the surface are with equal volume. Such a state has two independent rotational symmetry, orbit and the spin rotational symmetry, respectively. On the left-hand side is the ordered phase, where a spin orbital coupling already been generated. Such a state is still isotropic. If we perform rotations in orbit and the spin channels exactly in the same way, such a state doesn't change. But if we perform two rotations in a different way, say if we fix the momentum and only rotate the spin, the system changes. This symmetry breaking pattern is called relative spin orbital symmetry breaking. It's a concept developed by Tony Leggett in the context of helium-3 system. Okay, having briefly described this isotropic phase, we'll discuss this anisotropic cousin. In such a state, we'll say it realize an example of anisotropic electron-liquid crystal state. You know, spatial anisotropy plays an important role in condensed matter physics, in particular in the liquid crystal physics. Liquid crystal has an important phase called kinematic phase, which breaks rotational symmetry but still maintains translational invariance. This classical physics has a quantum version, which is called the kinematic electron liquid crystal state. One simplest version is that the circular Fermi surface is distorted into an ellipse. This state was discussed by Steve Kielsen, Yuval Fredkin, and Vadim Agnasin quite several years ago. This kinematic electron liquid crystal state has been proposed to exist in many strongly correlated systems. Recently, there's an exciting experimental result in this strontium ruthenate material. This is a quasi two-dimensional bilayer material. In the presence of quite large magnetic field around 7 or 8 tesla, this system develops a metamagnetic phase transition. Then in this phase, the transport properties of relativity is measured along x and y axis. As we can see, there's a strong spatial anisotropy for this relativity measurement. This picture can be easily understood in terms of the Fermi surface kinematic distortion. This anisotropic distortion gave us an easy axis and hard axis for the charge transport. Sorry? Well, this is easy, this is hard.
Sure, but if I look at the data, you know,
this is
a drastic.
Oh, I see.
Easy and hard direction.
Okay, I should have changed the color.
A very large distortion of the Fermi surface.
You're sweet.
The fact that you're describing.
Oh, this is not my results, you know, these are just present people's understanding. There's still some controversy.
Anisotropy of the spatially isotropic,
spatially
uniform anisotropic state, much more likely to be
associated
with domain walls or something.
Because
of the magnitude.
Well, they have a new result. In such a state, they tilt this magnetic field a little bit, so basically we remove the domain walls. Mm-hmm. This, then they measure resistivity along A and B axis. We still observe such an isotropy. The domain wall is what people originally observed, that that is in this phase, the magnetic, as this relativity get a huge jump. But here they can explicit the anisotropy.
Is it large?
Oh, three times, right? It's around the three, here two times large. But now it's not still not, since such a material is quite complicated, several from the surface. Now, it's not clear whether this distortion occurs in which Fermi surface yet. This is a quite new result, it's actually half a year ago.
What are the magnetic properties of this compound?
So this material at zero magnetic field is a paramagnet. But if
the problem is very strong, sufficiently strong anisotropy.
Not very strong. There's some anisotropy, but not very strong.
Okay.
But the system develops a metamagnetic transition at the 7-8 star, and magnetization has a huge jump. Then this anisotropy appears in such a phase. 7 or 8 star.
There's also a jump. So if you look at the red curve, it's also a sudden jump.
Yeah, this is not very clear. Yeah, the overall conductance, the overall resistivity, there are some reduced. Probably some domain wall, still some domain wall remains. Probably that reason.
So what is the direction of
the magnetic field? Magnetic field is basically along the perpendicular to this the two-dimensional plane. And now they tilted a little bit, just to try to pin the domain wall, to remove the domain wall, pin the distortion.
But the in-plane component is always parallel to the easy axis for transport?
No. It's, well, let me think, yeah.
What determines the direction of the easy axis?
This I didn't remember clearly, this is a good question. But here, probably that they're correlated.
Is it in plane or perpendicular to the plane?
Which one? What?
Is
in plane. We have A and B axis. So one of them is easy axis, the other is a hard axis.
And how is it related to the direction of the magnetic field?
This should probably arise from some spin of the coupling. I think it's not well understood yet. Since the I didn't remember how it's what described in the paper. I think they are correlated, either parallel or anti-parallel, either parallel or perpendicular. I didn't. They applied magnetic fields to tilt a little bit along A or B axis, but it doesn't occupy. Okay, sorry. The largest component is the perpendicular plane, but there are some small components in the plane. If the magnetic field is rigorously perpendicular plane, then the distortion can occur either along A axis or B axis to create domain wall. You cannot see the anisotropy. Just the, because there are already domain walls, so the anisotropy is averaged out. The tilting of this magnetic field just to remove the domain wall.
Is it so clear that it removes the domain?
Not very clear. From here, it's probably you can see because there are some jump. Probably there are still some domain wall remains. But you can see even when outside the phase, it's a even larger magnetic field. Then this distortion presumably vanishes. So this relativity still doesn't return. So this is not very understood. This pneumatic electron liquid crystal state is also proposed to exist in the two-dimensional gallium arsenide and aluminum gallium arsenide heterojunctions at a very high magnetic field in a high Landau level region. When the filling factor is close to a half integer number filling, then again the resistivity is measured along A axis and along the Y axis and the X axis as depicted in the dashed line and the solid line respectively. Again, we can see there's a strong spatial anisotropy. Well, it's not clear. It depends on different groups. Most of the people probably saw it's a stripe, but you had Fredkin and Steve Kivelson, they had some arguments. It's not stripe, let's say, pneumatics. Basically, when they make the IV curve, they see a quite good linear dispersion, which means that if a stripe, it will exhibit quite a strong nonlinear IV curve. It's an argument. So is it really the stripe is melted? It's no longer stripe, but just a pneumatic. Yeah, I'm sure you are experts on this topic. So that depends on different people. Now, for both examples, both phases, they exist in the high magnetic field where the spin degree of freedom is in fact frozen. We'll see this anisotropic pivotal magnetic phase is an electron liquid crystal phase with spin degree of freedom. In such a phase, The Fermi surface exhibits a period of distortion. The spin up Fermi surface shifts right, spin down shifts left. Again, we can see there's no net spin moment if average the spin over the Fermi surface goes zero. Like exhibits a spin dipole moment in the momentum space. Again, the spin dipole moment is defined in momentum space, not in coordinate space. Its cosine theta is angular form factor. Such a state is anisotropic in both orbit and spin space, so it can be considered as mimetics in both orbit and spin channels. Okay, so far, we finished the introduction part. Basically, we have shown that the unconventional magnetic state is an analogy of the unconventional superconductivity in the context of magnetism. It's a high partial wave channel generalization of a magnetic state. Unconventional magnetic state can be classified into two groups. The isotropic phase, it provides a new mechanism to generate spin-up coupling. Its anisotropic cousin is an electron-liquid crystal state with a spin degree of freedom. Next, let me present the mechanism for this unconventional magnetic state. I will show it arises from the Fermi surface instability of the Pomarachik time. I will explain what is Pomarachik instability. I will further discuss the mean field physics structures. Most of our current understanding of interacting electron system is based on the Landau Fermi liquid theory. An essential part of this theory is the existence of the Fermi surface. Well, electrons close to Fermi surface are important for the physical properties of such a state. The Landau's theory is characterized by the interaction functions between electrons over the Fermi surface is a forward scattering process. If there's no external spin orbital coupling, this interaction function can be conveniently divided into the density channel interaction and the spin channel interaction respectively. Traditionally, they are denoted as Fs or Fa, symmetric or asymmetric. These two Landau interaction functions can be further decomposed in different orbital partial wave channels. To make them dimensionless, we multiply the density of states, so we arrive at a number of different Landau parameters. This Fermi liquid theory is completely determined by the Landau parameters. Pomeranchuk, he found that in order for the Fermi surface to be stable, these Landau parameters can be too negative, otherwise the Fermi surface will be distorted. Basically, he treated the Fermi surface as an elastic membrane in the momentum space and tried to disturb the Fermi surface a little bit. Certainly, there's a kinetic energy penalty. There's also a change of the interaction energy, which is proportional to the Landau parameters. And if we add these two contributions together, then if this criterion is met, then Fermi surface, this surface tension vanishes, then Fermi surface began to be distorted. This criterion is called a Pomarachik instability criterion. The most familiar example of Pomarachik instability is just the ferromagnetic phase transition. It's an instability of the F0A channel. Zero means orbital S wave, A means a spin attributed channel. The pneumatic electron-liquid crystal state we mentioned above is an instability in the F2S channel. S means in the density channel. 2 means is a quadrupolar distortion. The unconventional magnetic state we are interested in, they arise from the Pomeranchuk instability in the spin channel. Let me take the simplest case, F1A channel, for example. A means spin triplets, 1 means orbital P wave. These two Fermi surface structures are what we have already presented. Now let me just summarize. This isotropic case, the Fermi surface remains circular. The P wave distortion exhibits in the spin channel. We dub this phase beta phase. This beta phase is an isotropic cousin. The P wave distortion exhibits in the Fermi surface channel. We dub this phase alpha phase. We use this terminology, alpha and beta phases, because they are quite similar to the superfluid helium 3 A and B phases. Now let me briefly summarize what is the helium 3 A and B phases. The co-pairing structure in such a state is a P wave triplet co-pairing. The spin degree of freedom of the co-pairing can be described by a so-called D-vectors. Now in a B phase, the configuration of the D-vector can be chosen to be parallel to the momentum of the particle inside the co-pair. As a result, the B phase is essentially isotropic. The magnitude of gap function is a constant over the Fermi surface. Such a state is an anisotropic cousin called the helium 3 aphase, where the gap function is anisotropic over the Fermi surface. In a three-dimensional system, it has point norms over the Fermi surface. If we compare the helium 3 b and a phases with the alpha and the beta phases, so from the symmetry point of view, they are quite similar to each other. Now let me provide a mean field theory for such a state. Let me, for simplicity, look at the two-dimensional p-wave case, for example. Let's define our order parameters. Their physical meaning is the spin currents flowing x and y directions. Each of them is a three vector in the spin space. Or, equivalently, their physical meaning can be considered as a spin dipole moment over the momentum space. Please pay attention to this angular form factor, cosine theta and sine theta. They reflect to the p-wave structure. If we compare this order parameter to the ferromagnetic order, you can see they are quite similar to each other. But in the ferromagnetic case, the angular form factor is a trivial constant 1 because it is the S-wave channel. So this can be easily generalized to arbitrary partial wave channel. Then in that case, the order parameter just spin multiple moments over the Fermi surface. We only need to replace the angular form factor. Now this is the many body interactions. This is a spin current interaction. So this interaction looks quite unrealistic, but it's quite reasonable. It describes the simplest non-SV channel exchange interactions. Then if we follow the standard mean field procedure, we decouple this interaction and write a mean field Hamiltonian. But in order to classify the possible ground state configuration, we need to construct the James-Planck free energy up to the quartic level. It satisfies all the symmetry constraints, including spin rotational symmetry, orbital rotational symmetry, parity, and time reversal symmetry. This coefficient of the quadratic term is important. If it goes negative, it means that the instability occurs. And we have two different quadratic terms, V1 and V2. This term is particularly important. Whether the coefficient goes negative or positive, give us the state configurations. We will see it corresponds to alpha and beta phases. Let's remember this term is N1 cross N2. If it goes negative, then it means that...
This
is a zero temperature. This is zero temperature. It's a proportional...
Yeah, I understand, yeah. But...
Yes.
That looks like
Landau
theory.
This is a Landau theory.
Yeah.
This is Ginsburg Landau free energy.
It can happen that, for example, it happens at final temperature.
Yes, final temperature will increase R. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this expression is for zero temperature. It depends on whether it's Landau parameters, whether it's negatively large enough to drive the physical energy. Mm-hmm. If we have final temperature, probably there is another correction. Linear, probably is square t square or something, or linear t, I didn't remember.
Do we need to have at the final temperature, do we need that density of electrons should be sufficiently small or what?
Well, the criterion is that the Landau parameter is negatively large enough, the Pomerantz instability. But this Landau parameter has two contributions. One is density of state, the other is the interaction. So if the density of state is, can be enhanced, it's favorable to have such a physical relation. The density of state related to density of final structure.
But in two-dimensional system, you can simply regulate the density, the total density.
Yeah, but you put a system in the lattice, you can in some particular band structure enhance the density of state. For example, some Van Hoff singularity.
How can you drag this?
Well, we derive is just we have this mean field theory, just calculate.
How do you derive it? Isn't it asking maybe microscopically what?
How to derive this?
Drive. Physically, what do you do to a system? What kind of
a physical example.
For example, if you have cooling interaction, and you calculate the exchange interaction, and you can classify into different channels, S-wave, P-wave, D-wave, that currently not clear whether Quinn interaction is enough or not to drive the phase transition in a PWF. But any interaction that has contribution in different channels, if in that channel the interaction is large enough, then the instability occurs.
So how do you want to be related to
this one? Well, this term is closely related to lambda parameter. But this two basically is proportional density of states, Fermi velocity, or this kind of thing. I can give you the expression, but it's quite complicated. Depends on the bundle structure detail. It's written in our long paper, but basically these two are not dependent on lambda parameter.
So the sign of V2 determines whether it's
an isotropic. Yes, it depends on detail, the bundle structure, the nonlinear dispersion relation, something like that. We can change the sign of V1, of this term V2.
You can choose between
V2. Yes. But if V2 is negative, that means that the N1 and N2 will prefer to be perpendicular to each other with an equal amplitude. Without loss of generality, we can choose N1 paired to X axis, N2 paired to Y axis. Then you plug in this configuration to mean field Hamiltonian corresponds to beta phase. On the other hand, if V2 is positive, then it prefers N1 and N2 to be collinear, and their ratio of their magnitude. For simplicity, we just set N2 to 0, only allow N1, and this corresponds to alpha phase. So we can see that both phases, they arrive from the same Fermi surface instability. Exactly. Literally, well, it depends on, you know, the definition of spin current is a little bit tricky. So if we use the group velocity to define, there's no spin transport. So now the velocity, the dispersion relation is the center is shifted here. So if we the spectrum we need to recalculate respect to the new center, and then actually there's no net spin transport. But indeed there has the some symmetry point of view it's agree with the spin current, but there's no net spin transport.
Yeah, so the left-hand side looks very much like
the Rushbar.
Exactly.
Yeah. I will show. Yeah, I will show how this connects to Rushbar. You can see, then this is Rushbar. Okay. So let me look at the beta phases more carefully, and then they exhibit a vortex configuration in the momentum space. This Fermi surface structure is what we discussed. And see, with more around this vortex, this one number one, the all the parameter configurations here. But this spin orbital coupling pattern, we know at the Hamiltonian level, we don't have spin orbital coupling. So this spin orbital coupling is a result of symmetry spontaneous breaking. So we can arrive at energetically equivalent configurations by performing global spin rotations on such a system. So if we rotate the system around Z axis at 90 degrees, and N1 rotate here, N2 rotate here. If we plug in here, you can see this line rotated here, and this line here. Then it becomes a Rushbar interaction. Or if we rotate the system around the x-axis at 180 degrees, then the N1 doesn't change, N2 flip the sign. Then again, in the momentum space, this configuration changes to Dresselhaus. The one number changes from 1 to minus 1. So all
in your system, because there's no spin over coupling, either all equivalent.
They are equivalent. Yeah. Exactly. They are equivalent state.
Different states.
Yes. The collective mode is something like a spin wave, but not exactly the same, but it can rotate from here to here to here without the energy cost.
So suppose you have a quantum well that has a instability against the symmetry breaking with respect to the inversion.
Yes.
Say,
you probably can select one.
Yeah, you get.
Yes.
So that kind of symmetry breaking will result in this.
Yeah. It's something like in the ferromagnetic state. The spin, spontaneous spin polarizing can here, everywhere, every directions. But if you have external magnetic field, you can ping one.
What I mean is that suppose you have a quantum well, right?
Yes.
And say the spontaneous ferroelectric developments in Z direction.
Yeah.
Perpendicular direction.
Yeah, pick up this one.
Drive such a...
Yeah. This is the Rushbaugh coupling from the asymmetry of the quantum well is like an external spin orbital field and pick up one particular configuration. If we make an analogy to a ferromagnetic transition, the method you said is like an external magnetic field in the ferromagnet.
It's a ferroelectric transition, but it's not external, it's spontaneous.
Oh yeah, but as long as the latent distortion is fixed for the spin. Yeah.
So you think that cannot be described within the lack of fermilibrium?
Your lattice, currently we haven't improved the lattice system, lattice degree of freedom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be more interesting. It means a multi-ferroic coupling.
Okay. So if you want to realize something that the orbit arises spontaneous.
Sure.
Okay. So let me imagine that I have a quantum well, right? And the perpendicular direction, which is symmetric.
Symmetric.
But due to some reason, electricity develops, and that makes that quantum well asymmetric, then automatically
generate Rushbaugh. Yeah, this one can amplify that. Yes. If you have a bad Rushbaugh is small, then...
And then he said, well, that's external. The external... Yeah. So that not treatable within the level.
Yeah. Make an analogy. So for the ordinary paramagnetic system, I can calculate the spin susceptibility. We know the Fermi liquid will give a correction of the magnetic susceptibility. If the correction is large enough, then susceptibility diverges, right, a spontaneous ferromagnetic. Here the analogy is, what you said is quite similar. If you have a Rushbaugh field, we can calculate the susceptibility response to this kind of spin orbital field. Then the Fermi liquid theory will give renormalization. If this if the lambda parameter is negative large enough, then this susceptibility diverges. Then you don't need the external field and automatically generate the spin orbital. The relevant channel is that.
It's unclear how you realize that.
Well, if it can be realized, it would be quite exciting. This method can be easily generalized to arbitrary high aperture channels. For example, in the D-wave channel, they also have alpha and beta phases. For the alpha phase, we have two elliptical. For the surface, these two ellipses are orthogonal to each other. For beta phase, we have the vortex configuration. The winding number can be either positive or negative. How much time do I have? If there's not much time, I can skip this collective excitation part. This part, 15 minutes. Yeah, I mean, quick. This part is maybe the technical, but there's something interesting. We know as a general result of symmetry spontaneous breaking, the ground state, we have a low energy excitations that's typically called ghost normals. I will further discuss the neutron scattering spectrum. I will further show in particular channel the ground state exhibit a certain chiral instability. So let me begin with the alpha phases. The alpha phase, for simplicity, let me begin with two-dimensional P-wave case. The alpha phase breaks both orbital and spin rotational symmetries. So the ghost storm modes, the character excitations, can be classified as the orbital modes and the spin channel modes. The orbital channel modes is just the oscillation of the distorted Fermi surface while keep the spin configuration unchanged. Within the random phase approximation, we can show that this mode is overdamped. The damping is anisotropic, depends on the propagation direction of the wave vector Q. If the Q is along the x-axis, then this damping is a maximum. If the Q is along y-axis, then it becomes underdamped.
What does it mean, S?
Fermi surface oscillation. Fermi surface.
The question is how to excite them?
Well, this is the collecting mode.
Is it electromagnetic oscillation or what?
Well, you fix the spin, since the Fermi surface is distorted, we can distort in this way, can also in this way or this way. So there's oscillation corresponds to this, like Fermi surface, the orbital mode.
Yeah.
But what is it? How to discover them experimentally? What do you mean?
Experimentally, this is hard. I don't. But the spin channel mode can be detected in the inelastic neutron scattering, but this channel mode probably is hard. But from Urad Fredkin and Steve Kielsen, they discuss this collective mode couples to fermions, and we'll see that fermions receive a wide non-identic correction. They become a non-Fermi liquid. Electron self-energy, the imaginary part, is no longer, it became a very short time, became a non-Fermi liquid. Probably indirectly from the fermion spectrum, you can see something. But some directly detect to this mode experimentally is hard.
So if the symmetry is a broken externally?
Yes.
So.
You mean the lattice?
And say in the prism to wash
ball. Yeah.
Okay. Imposed externally.
Yes, yes. Then there will be a gap.
Then you'll have a gap, right?
Exactly.
The spectrum will still there.
Yeah, yes, it becomes a gap. Yes. Such as if in the lattice, and this Fermi surface oscillation also become a gap. And but you need temperature, it will increase to excite.
And no coupling to electromagnetic field, for example?
No, this mode doesn't. Basically, this theory can also work equally well for a neutron system, so it doesn't couple. The electric magnetic field couples the overall density, right? Electric field couples, but there's no overall density, but like a dipole. Anything can couple to the spin dipole moment, so this is quite tricky. I don't know any particular experiment method can directly couple to the dipole moment in the momentum space. That's a hard thing to experiment. So the spin channel goes to modes, corresponds to fixed Fermi surface, and then spin to process. And interestingly, in spite of the Fermi surface and isotropic distortion, this mode still exhibits a nearly isotropic, undamped, and linear dispersion relations, as long as the propagation wavelength Q is small. Now let me discuss the neutron spectrum in the alpha phases. Unfortunately, in the elastic neutron spectrum, we shouldn't observe black peaks because all the parameters are not spin moments. They do not couple to neutron moments directly. But still, fortunately, in the inelastic neutron spectrum, we are still able to observe the random peaks which develops at an altered state. Basically, although the collective modes are all parameters, they do not couple to neutron moments directly, they do couple to spin waves and can induce random peaks in the spin wave channel. Within this random phase calculation, we found this neutron spectrum. Because the alpha phases is anisotropic, this random peak only appear in the spin flip channel. It doesn't appear in the spin non-flip channel.
Is this due to magnetic coupling between electrons and neutrons?
Well, it's quite interesting. The collective mode here, the spin channel mode, actually the carry spin. Although this mode is not spin moment, but this mode carries spin. And this can couple to the neutron mode.
Dipolar magnetic coupling, correct?
In some sense, but yes, it's induced, but you know, neutron only have spin moments. So electron moments can couple to neutron moments directly. Yeah. But this other parameter is not the moment, but it's like a spin dipole moment. So it cannot directly couple to neutron moments. But in the ordered phase, say this is the other parameter. It's a spin with the angular form factor. In the ordered phase, it can couple to spin wave. Then because the symmetry is already broken there. And you can see this spin wave couples to this collective mode, this collective mode, and couples spin wave. So this is collective mode. They induce the random part of the spin wave, and spin wave can be detected by neutron scattering. So in the ordered phase, in other words, in the ordered phase, the spin mode, spin wave mode, and this collective mode become conjugate part, and the oscillation in one part induce the excitation in the spin waves. Spin wave can be detected here.
What typical wavelengths for this wave do
you have in mind? Well, this is a kind of long wavelength from zero. This is good collective mode, right? The ghost mode. It's not, presumably it's a long wavelength.
coming to the
Well, it's not ferromagnetic. This is an interesting question, yeah. So in the ferromagnetic is a quadratic. This one, actually, you can see the time reversal symmetry is maintained. So the dispersion is linear. It's not quadratic. It's an important feature. Okay, now let's discuss the collective mode in the beta phase. The beta phase collective mode is a relative spin orbital mode. So you fix the momentum and only rotate the spin, we can rotate the system around x, y, and z axis. So we have three relative spin orbital modes. If the instability occurs in the high orbital angular momentum for air larger than 2, then all these modes has a well-defined dispersion relation. It's a linear dispersion relation. As a small wave vector, this dispersion relation lies outside the particle continuum, so it's underdamped. It's a well-defined dispersion relation. Again, this relative spin orbital modes will induce resonance in the spin waves, which can be detected in the inelastic neutron scattering. But here, this phase basically is isotropic, so this resonance will appear in all the neutron modes, including both spin flip and non-spin flip. Now, how about in the P wave case? We have already discussed this phase for a number of times. At each time, I assume the ground state is uniform, but actually, there are some caveat in it. It turns out that the uniform state can't be the true ground state. The reason is that if we write the Ginzburg-Landau free energy as a spatial derivative term, it allows a term as a linear order of spatial derivative. Such a term satisfies all the symmetry constraints. Such a term is not important at high temperature disorder phase because they are at the cubic order of the order parameter. It does not important. It's not important up phase either because in there, N1 and N2 they are collinear. This term simply doesn't contribute. But in the beta phase, N1 and N2 they are perpendicular to each other. This term becomes important. Suppose we twist this beta phase configuration a little bit, develop a spiral, then this term contribution at the linear order of the momentum, as a long wavelength limit, this term, the contribution dominates over the regular derivative terms. That means that uniform states are no longer stable, they are spontaneously develop a spiral pitch. The optical value of the pitch is proportional to the order parameter. This situation is quite similar to what occurs in the chiral liquid crystal and the helical magnet system. But in both cases, it's because of the parity explicitly broken. Well, in the chiral liquid crystal, because the molecule itself has a certain chirality in it, it turns out that in ground state, the uniform state turns out to be it's unstable to a spiral with a pitch. In the helical magnet system, for example, the manganese silicide, because the lattice itself breaks the inversion symmetry, it generates a Jelichinsky-Maria type spin of the coupling. You can see here it also lets a linear spatial derivative. And it turns out that the spin moments in the ferromagnetic state can be collinear, develop a spiral pattern. In our case, the situation is different. Well, this parity is spontaneously broken, not explicitly broken. It's a chiral instability in the originally non-chiral system. It can be considered as a dynamic generation of a Jelichinsky-Maria type spin of the coupling. But this spiral pattern here is not a spiral for the spin moment. The spin moment is zero everywhere. It's a spiral of the spin dipole moment. So this chiral instability does not occur in the ferromagnetic phase transition. It does not occur in any other channel of polarization instability either.
Why do you call it the dynamic generation?
Well, this Jelichinsky-Maria needs explicitly parity broken. For example, in the manganese silicide, because the lattice lacks of inversion center. But here we have a theory. From beginning with, we don't have spin of the coupling is parity even. But in this beta phase, this beta phase spontaneously break parity, and after the parity is explicitly broken, it generates a Jelichinsky-Maria type spin of the coupling, which causes the order parameter to spiral.
Standard for this symmetry, it's standard cubic invariant, correct?
I mean for this term? Sorry.
It's done. It's cubic invariant.
Cubic invariant.
Yeah.
Which means cubic. Yes. But in the ordered phase, this term gets expectation value. So we are behaves like a quadratic. So that's why this term in the disordered phase is at the cubic level, so it's not important at the disordered phase. But at the ordered phase, since this field is condensed, get expectation value. So in this ordered phase, then we get a coefficient which is proportional to the order parameter cube contributes to the free energy. Mm-hmm. Then this in the ordered phase, the parity is spontaneously broken, and then it gives us Galashinsky-Maria type physics. But in the disordered phase, we don't have such a thing.
So why
don't we
call this spontaneous generation?
It's
like usually when we call the
non-generation,
it's like quantum
fluctuation
to induce some kind of...
No, this is in the ordered phase. In disordered phase, we don't have
that. But in order, you have, it's like a nuclear level, you have the
ground state,
spontaneous, seems simple,
broken. Right.
So this is not really the dynamic
generation. No, this is dynamic in the sense that it's from phase transition. This can fluctuate. In this sense, not static means that you have external field pinning. You can't move. So, you can argue, yeah, why is this called dynamic? Well, here, dynamic in the same sense as you said. Since you have a spontaneous ground state, but this spin orbital coupling actually can fluctuate, depends on the what kind of ground state you choose, right? The collective mode causes your fluctuation of spin orbital coupling. In this sense, this spin orbital coupling is not fixed by the underlying relativistic physics, but really a many body collective effect. It can fluctuate. In this sense, it is dynamic.
So all spontaneously generated dynamic.
Yeah. For example,
all is generated spontaneously.
For example, For example, if we make analogy to the ferromagnet, it means that the ferromagnetic state, the spin power rating not necessarily along the z-axis, can go here and go here. You can move. Okay. Probably I take too much time there. Next, let me discuss the possible experimental realization and detection method. Up to now, we are not aware of any conclusive experimental system to find this unconventional magnetic state. But conceptually, it's quite a natural generalization of magnetism. The driving force is still exchange interactions, but we need pretty strong exchange interaction in the non-S-wave channel. So taking into account the experimental discovery of the unconventional superconductivity, we are quite encouraged to expect this unconventional magnetic state can be found experimentally in the future. So let me skip this part.
So if you compare the time scale.
Oh. Yeah. This is about 2,500 years ago. Okay. Now let me summarize some possible directions to search this unconventional magnetic state. This heavy fermion compound uranium fluorinated silicide is a good candidate. Such a material exhibits a mysterious surface transition at 17 Kelvin. From the thermodynamic quantity measurement, it exhibits a huge jump in the supercritical heat. So it really means there enters a new state. Fortunately, after 20 years research efforts, the nature of this state is still unknown. There's recently a really interesting work by Chandra Verma's group. He proposed a hidden order. In his language, he called that a helicity order, but in our language, it's just a P wave alpha phase. The spin up from the surface, shift to the up, spin down from the surface, shift to up and to down. He calculated the thermodynamic quantity and agreed with the experimental results reasonably well. So this is encouraging, but we need to bear in mind this hidden order behavior is quite controversial. At the current stage, this PVO alpha phase is a good candidate, but it's not clear whether it can really be responsible for this hidden order behavior. Now let's look at the bilinear Russell material again. The pneumatic distortion in such a state exists in the large external magnetic field. So this distortion this phase transition can be considered as a mixture of instability in both density and spin channels. It's pretty much close to what we want. What we want is in a zero field of transition with zero magnetization. So probably such a transition can occur in a similar compound, probably in the same Rusnet family. Now let's look at another strongly correlated system with two-dimensional electron gas, where the Landau parameters, which has been calculated within the quantum Monte Carlo simulation by Stapley and the Martins group, we found that F1A is always negative and keep decreasing as the density is lowered, where the particle density is inversely proportional to RS squared. Unfortunately, these numbers, although it's negative in the right direction, but they are not negatively large enough to drive the phase transition. But this simulation was done in a relatively high density regime, small s, so it would be interesting to if the simulation can further extend it to a low density regime, that would say whether these Landau parameters can be negatively large enough to drive the phase transition. Now, if we assume this phase exists, then experimental detection method would be very straightforward. For example, the upper angular resolved photoemission spectroscopy can be used to detect the Fermi surface distortion. Actually, the upper has already been used in the conventional spin orbital coupling material. Because of the band splitting for the spin configurations, the upper line shape exhibits a double peak structure. Well, in our alpha and beta phases, we also have band splitting. We should also expect this double peak splitting. But in our case, the band splitting is proportional to all the parameter, thus is temperature and pressure dependent. The neutron scattering spectroscopy is another powerful method to study magnetic properties of systems. As we have analyzed before, we shouldn't observe black peaks, but fortunately, we are able to see inelastic neutron scattering. We should see random peaks below TC. This unconventional magnetic state should also exhibit interesting transport properties. For example, in the beta phases, we have two different Fermi surfaces. The different size will give us two different, if we perform the quantum oscillation experiment of the Schubert curved Hertz magneto oscillations, each Fermi surface will contribute a different frequency. As a superposition, we should observe this bead pattern. And again, this bead pattern should be correlated to temperature and other external parameters. For the D-wave alpha phase, we should also observe another interesting transport properties. If we pass a charge current in such a system, it will automatically generate a spin current. It can be very easily understood in this way. Suppose we pass a current in the x direction, then because of the spatial anisotropy, the spin down Fermi surface and spin up Fermi surface will contribute differently, so we automatically generate a spin current. For the general situation, if the charge current flows in an arbitrary direction, the induced spin current, the direction is symmetric with respect to x-axis. This induced spin current will result in a spin accumulation in sample's edge, which in principle can be detected optically. So this is the summary of the talk. We have showed that unconventional magnetic state is an analogy of unconventional superconductivity. It's a high partial wave channel generalization of ferromagnetism. Its unconventional magnetic state can be classified anisotropic and isotropic pattern. The isotropic phase gave us a new mechanism to generate the spin orbital coupling, and the anisotropic phase gave us an example of electron liquid crystal with a spin degree of freedom. And thank you for your attention. Sorry to have. Yes.
Yeah.
How to relate it to Kodak?
You need a large latitude amount of
Fermi, which means a strong repulsive interaction.
But I'm thinking about this, it depends on the density state, right? You give like a flat band, like even the T band. So you increase the density state.
That's
the
possible. This is the reason why I want to give this talk here is that this phase is quite difficult to realize in condensed matter, particularly because of the P-wave channel changing patch. But the quotient from the P-wave flash by randomness probably.
No, it's just flat band, like on the
flat band's interaction. But interaction means non-interaction.
Okay,
and also usually the SU channel bonding is over. If you flat bands, the density of state enhanced, but the field was all the channels, not only for the PVU channel. You know, probably the SU channel is more important bonding. So the ideal interaction for drop this Q probably like this. This basically is a repulsive interaction. But the stronger repulsive part is not at zero, but at this side. Then if you do Fourier transform, the PVU part will get dominant. But this is quite difficult for ordinary conventional system. But I saw that in the PVU patch part, because of the centrifugal potential, it behaves like this. But the problem is that the PVU patch part, the system is not stable.
You probably don't even need the resonance. You already have the PVU interactions.
But not much enough.
But you change the...
So this is the reason why this itinerant mechanism is more difficult than superfluidity. It's essentially a strong coupling system. In superconductivity, if I have attractive interaction, no matter how small the driving state is, but here, there has this Stoner or Pomerantchikov criterion, the interaction must be stronger, large enough to pass the criteria. It's not a recoupling problem. So that's why this... So that's personally, I felt that people know code atom. Seems that in condensed matter, the itinerant magnetism is a large part, but currently in the cold atom community, it doesn't receive much attention. I'm not sure whether it's possible to realize such an itinerant magnetism. Conceptually, theoretically, it's a much more difficult question than superfluidity. It can be addressed in such a well-controlled system would be great. In particular, I say if the PVU can be realized, it's really exciting. I don't know how it's directly connected.
Let me ask you. So I would like first to ask you whether I understood it correctly, that the main difference between, to say, unconventional superconductivity and unconventional magnetism is that in unconventional superconductivity we have Cooper pairs of spin with spin one, and here we have electron hole pair.
Exactly.
So that is neutral. Neutral.
Yeah.
Pair with spin one.
Exactly.
Correct. What is the action of different small perturbations on that? First of all, spin orbit interaction. We know that, for example, B phase in unconventional superconductors acquires immediately the fixed angle.
Yeah?
104 degree.
Yes.
Does it happen here?
We haven't calculated that. But if the system has a spin orbital coupling, it will choose probably not this configuration, but this rotate a little bit. It's possible, like a dipole locking in the Higgs 3D case. It's very possible. But obviously, it hasn't. Go to that stage.
Another also very simple question. If you apply a magnetic field, then because this spin, the pairs have spin one, they will tend to arrange, to orient along the magnetic field.
Yeah, in such a system, the spin will tilt a little bit along.
So what is the magnetic susceptibility? What is it? Did you calculate it?
In magnetic susceptibility is pretty much the same as ordinary Fermi liquid.
Does it differ from Pauli paramagnetism or not?
It is the same. For example, in the Rushbaugh system, if you calculate the magnetic susceptibility, it's almost the same as the ordinary Fermi. Here is the same.
Standard Landau expression.
Yeah. But here, if you apply magnetic field, the spin configuration is like a tilt a little bit along the magnetic direction.
No, standard Landau expression doesn't go, but doesn't work because you are in the area of of instability, correct?
But this instability in the F1A channel is not in the F0A channel. So in the magnetic survey, that channel is parametric. you are seeing the magnetic survey being in such a phase. But this phase is critical. It has instability in the F1A channel, not in the F0A channel. But the magnetic channel is permanent. So it's finite magnetic susceptibility. It's the poly susceptibility. Thank you. So,